Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. Mark LeVillier, your host for this hour of continuing series. Later on, it's The Man in the Iron Mask, Firefighters, The Adventures of Marco Polo as well. But first, episode 4 of 5 of The Lorco Diamonds Matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, a CBS episode from November 10th, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Abdul.
Abdul?
You don't know me.
So?
I have a little business.
Well, I'm so happy for you. I hope it's doing well.
Not bad.
Okay,
you
what...
You don't know me, but you're looking for me.
Now look, Joe, Abdul...
It is a business to get jobs for people, for servants.
Oh, the employment agent.
Ah.
Have you got the address of that girl who worked for the Countess D'Atelier?
Oh, sure. You're very lucky. She's very pretty.
You've got the wrong idea, Abdul. I just want to talk to her.
Sure.
Where does she live?
For $20, I will remember.
I'll give you 10.
No, she's worth more.
Look, knock it off. I gotta find her and talk to her fast while I'm still alive. And while she is.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Algiers, North Africa, to the Home Office Transworld Fidelity Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Lorco Diamonds Matter. $100,000 worth missing. Expense account continued. Item 9, $15 even. Gratuity, tip, gift, bonus. Ah, why kid about it? It was a bribe. To a man named Abdul for the address of a girl named Chada. An address up in the native quarter, the Casbah. But the idea wasn't romance, no matter what Abdul thought. 4 hours earlier, in the Countess D'Atelier's apartment, somebody had turned on the gas and tried to kill one or both of us. It was 9-1 that the somebody was Chada the servant. I wanted to ask her why. I put my coat on and was just on the point of leaving my hotel. I slipped a gun into my side pocket and moved over to the door. Yeah, who is it?
Charlie Barrett. The guy you beat the daylights out of a couple hours ago, you know what I mean? No hard feelings, Sal. I just want to talk it over.
All right, Barrett. What's on your mind?
You'll object if I come inside. It's kind of personal, you know what I mean?
Probably. All right, come on in.
Much obliged. Hey, I didn't know who you were, but when we got in that little fracas, that there cop told me about it afterward. Man, you really got a wallop on you. You make a fella know he's at it, you know what I mean?
Is that why you're here, a post-mortem on the fight?
No, it's done and over. You whip me, fair and square, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Barrett, if you've got anything to say, let's have it fast. I'm in a hurry to get out of here.
Oh, well, I sure don't want to take up no more of your time than necessary. I know how it is. Of course, I'm on vacation now, but back in Chicago, I'm in the meat business.
Look, Barrett, will you please...
At least in a way I am. I'm in byproducts, actually. You know what they say? Use everything but the squeal. Well, I'm the fella that cans a squeal, you get it?
Oh, brother.
What I come here for was maybe to get it straightened out about that dame.
Do you mean the Countess D'Atelier?
Countess, them titles are a dime a dozen. I can buy them, sell them like sausages.
Well, what about her?
Now, look, neighbor, I was figuring to come here and put it to you man to man. You know what I mean?
I know what I'm beginning to think you mean.
I figure when you seen my position, you'd want to do the square thing. Like anybody on the right side of the fence would. You with me, neighbor?
You better drop that neighbor business. I've moved.
Well, Dollar, the thing stacks up like this. Now, I already had my claim staked there before you even got in town. I got a lot of money invested in that dame.
Barrett, so help me.
I've been taking her around places, you know, feeding her, buying her, one thing and another. Why, I was even going to kick through for a 20 grand chunk of ice for her. Well, she and I had that fight last week.
You what?
That dame's got highfalutin ideas.
What fight? What are you talking about?
Well, I just put it to her, cold turkey. I told her she had to quit Jenny flipping around with all those other fellas. Or I just wasn't going to have nothing more to do with her. Well, that made her mad, you understand? She lit into me. Man, you ought to hear that dame talk when she's mad. You'd think
hey, look,
she...
when was this fight? Was it before the diamonds were sent here?
Well, sure. Sure, I said if that's the way she was going to act, she could forget about them diamonds. Well, I ain't seen her since to talk to her, but I just can't seem to get her off my mind. Now, look, Dolly, you was in her apartment there for 2 hours and 40 minutes tonight, and I don't like it. It bothers me.
Strictly business, Barrett, and I got to get going.
Now, wait a minute, Dolly. We still got something to settle here. Like I told you, I got
money. Oh, Barrett, get out.
You better hold your horses. I don't know if you know the name, C.K. Barrett, if that means anything to you. But I got influence back there in them United States.
So it's the hard way, huh?
Look, you just work for that company of yours. You're nothing but an employee. And if you think you can talk to me like you can to some of these foreigners, then here, now.
Still a sucker for a left. Hello, room service. This is Johnny Dolly. Some drunk just wandered in here and passed out. Would you send up a couple of boys to drag it out in the hall? Expense account item 10, $5.30. A tip to the bellboys and taxi fare to the Casbah. The taxi dropped me off at the end of the causeway, and from there on I walked. It was late, well after midnight, but the narrow, crooked alleys were teeming with life. Some of it out in the open, some of it undercover. Small groups of people met together here and there along the cobbled streets. Men of 24 tongues and dialects. And women, too, slipped silently in and out of the dark doorways, crouched over tables in the dim-lit cafes and coffee houses. Groups usually fell silent when I passed and stared with hostile curiosity. The Casbah, backwash of North Africa. Little known, seldom bothered, and scarcely policed. And for an outsider, especially at night, more dangerous than dynamite. The address Abdul had given me turned out to be a coffee house, but it could still be legitimate. And there was only one way to find out.
What do you want?
I want to see Chata.
What for?
Private reasons.
Chata's not here.
Where can I find him?
Take a seat. Table in the corner. Maybe she come.
I took the seat, ordered coffee, and waited. A wrinkled old Arab squatted on a rug in the middle of the room and played strange, weird melodies. Gradually, the other patrons went back to their conversations, ignoring me completely. In fact, pointedly. 20 minutes passed. The girl didn't show.
You will, of course, not object, monsieur, if I take the liberty of joining you?
No, sit down.
Merci. So, you wish to see Chat?
Yeah, that's right. Do you know her?
Oui. I know her very well.
Know where to find her?
But naturally, monsieur. I always know where to find her. She's my woman.
Ah, oh, so you're the man they call Bobo.
Oui, monsieur.
The man who poisoned the diamond courier.
Oh, monsieur. It is true that I gave him some wine. A little, not much. But I think perhaps it was a bad vintage. Yes, most unfortunate.
It was for him.
Well, perhaps it was for the best. Life is so uncertain. But I do not wish to think of such unpleasantness. Instead, let us talk about diamonds.
Let's talk about killing, or attempted killing. Is Chanda the one who turned on the gas in the Countess's apartment?
It is possible that she did that.
On whose orders?
It was nothing personal, monsieur. I didn't even know that you were going to be there.
I see. Then you really meant to...
Diamonds, monsieur. That's enough of this foolish talk of killing.
All right. All right, what about the diamonds?
You were sent here by the company that has insured them. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And this company would like very much to recover these diamonds?
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Now, I'm told that these companies sometimes give large rewards, agree to an arrangement of a sort.
Make a deal, you mean, with no questions asked.
Yes, exactly. Now, is this thing true, monsieur? Is it possible that you would...
Do you have the diamonds, Bobo?
Well, let us say that I'm able to direct you to their location.
You could almost call that a confession.
What does it matter, so long as we are in the Casbah?
Oh, yeah, sure. I imagine you have been spotted all over the place.
At least 30, right in this room. I am in no danger here, monsieur.
Tell me something. You didn't pull off this job by yourself. Who else was in on it?
I only wish to talk about the diamonds. Well, can we come to an arrangement?
Bobo, I don't make deals with murderers.
dangerous.
It is better that you do not use such words, monsieur.
It's true, though, isn't it?
That is not the question. It is only that I resent the insulting way in which you...
Bobo, stand up!
Why you coming here?
Bobo!
Did you arrange for the police to come here, monsieur?
I'm as surprised as you are, Bobo.
Consider this matter of the deal. We will talk more at some other time, eh? Right, Bobo.
The patrons rushed for the doors, and in 1 minute flat, the coffee house was empty. Even the owner was gone. I was the only one left. 3 minutes later, the inspector, with a flying squad of 20 men, came bursting in from the street.
Well, Monsieur Dollar, I'm happy to find you are still alive.
Why don't you get lost somewhere?
For you, I think it most fortunate that we arrive in time.
Oh, sure, in time to follow up the only lead I had in this case.
To lose a suspect is better than to lose one's life, Monsieur.
Look, Inspector, I was holding a gun in my pocket, covering Bobo from the second he sat down at the table.
But, Monsieur,
so 30 men or not, if it had come to a showdown, he couldn't have done a thing. Because he'd have been the first one to get it, and he's smart enough to have known that.
But I thought
Let's face it, Inspector, you've done it again. You goofed.
But I was only thinking perhaps... Mon Dieu, what is to happen next?
The shooting was somewhere outside, but it hadn't been the police. All of the inspector's men were inside the coffee house. He gave them orders quickly, and they fanned out to search the area. The streets were empty now, dark and silent, not a soul in sight. We split up into pairs. I worked with Inspector Marcus for a while and left him and searched alone along a narrow side passage. And that's where I found him. He'd been shot 3 times in the back, and he was dying.
Monsieur Dollar.
Yeah, Bobo.
You can't forget that deal, I think.
Yeah. It's a little too late for deals now. Who was in on it with you, Bobo? Look, you've got nothing to lose by talking. You know that, don't you?
Except my honor, monsieur. As a citizen of the Casbah.
Who shot you?
A dragon, monsieur. 12 feet tall. With fiery eyes.
All right, Bobo, all right. But just tell me this, just one thing. Are you the man who attacked the property agent at the airport, the man who slugged André Jourdain?
Oui, monsieur. I do it very good. No, almost I kill him. It's too bad.
A minute or two later, Inspector Marcus came up, and we stood there looking down at the dead man lying on the stones of the alley. He was a short man, stockily built, with wide shoulders and a deep chest. It was the body of a man of action, of accomplishment. But he'd chosen to be a smuggler, dope peddler, thief, and killer. And now he had become the victim of another killer.
Did he say anything, monsieur? Was he able to talk?
Yeah, enough.
Eh? What is it you mean, monsieur? Do you know who is guilty of this?
Yeah, that's right, Inspector. I know the whole story now. The whole filthy, rotten story.
There'll be the final intriguing episode in our story of the Lorco Diamonds matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, the odds are set. The last chip is down. It's the last spin of the wheel. And death is the croupier. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 10th, 1955 on CBS. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to The Adventures of Marco Polo, Episode 9 in this continuing series, a syndicated episode from the 1940s.
Now present The Adventures of Marco Polo. Marco Polo returned to Venice with his father and uncle and servant. On arrival there, he expressed his reluctance at the idea of taking a journey to China. He stated his intentions of marrying Giuliana Vecchi and settling in Venice. Marco Polo's father was disappointed at his son's attitude. He tried to reason with him, but in vain. His uncle, Matteo, dubbed him a worthless young scoundrel. Eventually, Marco Polo went to Giuliana Vecchi's home, but he was deeply hurt when she told him that she was to wed another man on the following day. Stunned by the news, Marco Polo left the house, stepped into his gondola, and bade the gondolier to take him over the waterways. For hours, the gondola went on and on, through all the waterways of Venice. At last, night fell, and a jeweled sky shone down over the gleaming waters, and the gondolier protested, and Marco Polo went to his home. Slowly, he opened the door, entered, and called for his servant, Benno.
Benno! Benno! Where are you?
I'm here, Master Marco. For hours I have been awaiting your return.
Where is my father?
He is in his room making ready for his journey tomorrow.
Where does he go?
He goes to Rome to tell the Pope that at last he is going to China and to ask the Holy Father for messages for the great Khan.
So my father will go to China as the Pope's envoy?
He will. That is indeed a great honor, Master Marco.
A very great honor. Where is my Uncle Matthew?
He has retired to his bed.
Have I brought dishonor on my family, Benno?
It is not for me to judge you, Master Marco.
Does my father seek to force me to journey to China with him?
Your father is sadly disappointed in you.
He dubs me a coward, an idler.
Those are his words, not mine.
In your heart of hearts, that is what you think, Benno. Now come, admit it, man.
You are my master.
Are you ashamed of me?
I think you waste your life. You will find no happiness in marriage with Giuliana Vecchi. Oh, I beg your pardon, Master Marco. I should not have said that.
You are quite right, Benno. I will find no happiness in marriage with Giuliana Vecchi. Do you look forward to this journey to China?
Oh, there will be many adventures, many dangers, and many hardships, but... Well, mayhap I will be transported to paradise again.
You will miss me on the journey, Benno.
Oh, sadly, Master Marco.
I will come with you to China, Benno.
You have changed your mind?
I have been a fool. I go now to tell my father that I have changed my mind.
Oh, Master Marco, I am overjoyed. And you will bring great happiness to your father's heart.
I have already caused him great sadness. But I will make atonement. I will make that atonement gladly.
Going to Rome in the morning. I will leave early. Benno said that you were going to seek audience with the Pope.
Benno spoke the truth. As I am leaving early, I desire to retire now. I will speak with you before I go.
I desire to speak with you now.
I have nothing to say to you, Marco. You are unworthy of the name of Polo.
Father, I'm coming to China with you.
What words are these?
My name is Marco Polo. I come of a family of adventurers, courageous traders. It is my duty to go with you to China.
What of the lady of your heart? What of her?
Tomorrow she weds Antonio Muretti.
So, you have been disappointed in love, my son. And now you would pose as a hero. Marco, you are not a man. You cannot make sacrifices. You are a sad disappointment to me. Your uncle and I will make this historic journey to China. We will be the first white men to penetrate that great land. To make obeisance to the Kublai Khan. You will remain here in safety and security.
Oh, no, Father. Do not punish me thus. You need a strong young man to help you. Did I not help you before?
That is my decision, Marco. We want no cowards on this trip.
You shall not say that I'm a coward. Did I not prove my bravery?
Did you not also prove your selfishness? I say that you are not coming on this journey.
Oh, Father, will you not change your mind?
I will not. Your Uncle Matteo and I are ready to face any dangers, to make any sacrifices, so that we may contribute to the greatness of Venice.
You wish to come with us to avoid a broken heart. To hide your disappointment that Juliana will not wed you.
That is not true.
I think it is the truth. Go, my son. I have nothing more to say to you.
Poor father. I can only ask your forgiveness.
You have my forgiveness. I bid you good night.
May we speak further on this matter when you return from Rome?
I cannot alter my decision.
The next morning, Niccolo Polo commenced on his journey to Rome. On arrival there, he was granted an audience with the Pope. The Holy Father was delighted to receive messages from the Khan of Persia, and he bade Niccolo Polo to attempt to spread the gospel of Christianity throughout the land of China. He gave him gifts and messages for the great Kublai Khan. Then eventually, Niccolo Polo returned to Venice, and preparations were made for the great journey to China. Goods were selected for trading purposes. Piles of precious materials were packed. Maps were studied, and soon all was in readiness. On the night before he left, Niccolo Polo attended a great banquet given in his honor by the Doge of Venice. All the notables of Venice were invited to attend this banquet, and amongst them was Marco Polo. The young man sat at the foot of the table, gloomy, moody, ashamed, and disappointed. The Doge proposed a toast to Niccolo and Maffeo. And after the toast was spoken, Maffeo Polo rose to make his response.
Silence, gentlemen all. Silence for Master Maffeo Polo.
Most excellent and noble Doge, and gentlemen of our fair Republic of Venice, I rise to thank you for the kind words which you have said. As you know, my brother and I have dedicated our lives to the service of Venice. We start tomorrow on our long and perilous journey through the great land of China. God grant that we will return, and I know that the name of Polo will never be forgotten as long as Venice is Venice.
Benno, to me.
Lord, Master.
Yes.
I was standing behind your chair.
Before my father speaks, ask silence for me. I would wish the travelers farewell.
Oh, but your father is the next to speak. You have no right to speak, Master Marco.
Obey.
Your orders, man.
Quick, call for silence for me.
Crave silence for Master Marco Polo.
Marco, it is your father's right to speak.
Marco, be seated. I will be heard. Most excellent Doge, gentlemen of Venice. I thank you for what you have said of my father and my uncle. They leave tomorrow on a long and perilous journey. I have been on one journey with them. I know the perils they have to face, but I did not go freely on that journey. I was forced to go. I was a craven, selfish, idle man, and because of my cowardice, because of my selfishness, I am deprived from going on this great journey to China, a land which no white man has ever penetrated. My uncle and my father go to face danger. They leave me to guard over their interests. I would have you know I'm a disgrace to the name of Polo. It is my punishment that I must remain at home while these men go to face danger. I pray that God will watch over them, that they will return safely, and that if ever they are in need of aid, they will find some way to send me a message to go to their aid, to make atonement. That is all Marco Polo has to say.
Pray silence for Master Niccolo Polo.
Most excellent Doge, gentlemen of Venice, you have found in your heart to say words of kindness and encouragement to my brother and to me. For those words, I thank you. You have wished us well on this long and perilous journey. For those wishes, I thank you. As my brother has told you, our lives are dedicated to making Venice the greatest nation the world has ever known, to bringing riches to the coffers of the people of Venice, to hoist the flag of the Republic in far-flung lands. I am proud of what I've already done. This shall be my greatest task. And my brother and I look forward to making obeisance to the great Kublai Khan of China. Mayhap we will not return. You will know that we have sought to do our duty. The Holy Father has blessed me and given me several messages for the great Khan. These messages will be delivered. May God bless our Republic, and may the name of Polo be forever honored. Gentlemen,
I do not presume, Maitre, because I have something further to say. You have heard a brief speech from my son, Marco. You have heard of his shame, and he was bold enough, brave enough, and courageous enough to admit his sin. By that admission, he has made atonement, and I shall now permit Marco Polo to sail with us for China on the morrow.
There was great rejoicing throughout Venice the next day, and the Doge and the councillors bade farewell to the three men. The Doge and the councillors were on a gaily colored barge, and they cheered and sang as Niccolo Polo's vessel started on her journey. Marco Polo stood with his father and his uncle at the bow of the vessel, waving goodbye to their friends and looking forward with light hearts to the great task that lay before them. The vessel made good speed to the port of Beirut. Then bearers were engaged, and the little party started their journey overland to Yazdi, the capital of Persia. This time, the journey was made without any untoward events, and eventually they arrived at the gates of the Persian capital. Here they were given a great reception. Splendidly attired soldiers greeted them and accompanied them to the palace of the Khan. They were led into the great throne room where the Khan was waiting to receive them.
So you men from the West have kept your promise. I give you greeting. I extend the hand of friendship to you.
I thank you, mighty Khan. We have returned to carry out our promise. We bring gifts to you from His Holiness the Pope.
My greeting to the Holy Father.
It is earnest wish that you allow the religion of Christianity to be taught to your people.
We will not speak of that matter. You will be housed here in my palace, given every comfort, every attention, every luxury.
I thank you for your hospitality. My companions will now give you greetings.
Greetings, mighty Khan. We are happy to be at your court.
I am happy to have you.
Greetings, mighty Khan. We have lived to enjoy your hospitality, but soon we will leave to carry out our great intention of being the first white men to enter China.
That is madness. It has been sworn by my brother, the great Kublai Khan, that no white man shall ever enter China.
The Adventures of Marco Polo on Tuned to Yesterday, the ninth broadcast in that series from the 1940s. Now time for Firefighters with show number 15, first heard in syndication on December 2nd, 1949.
Five bells, stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts, a five-alarm fire. Five bells, move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll.
Let's go. Firefighters!
Presenting Firefighters, the true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll rejoin Tim Collins, rookie fireman, at the scene of the tenement fire. Chief Cody estimates that the building will become a total loss because fire, from its point of origin in the cellar, is now racing up the stair shaft of the flimsy structure. But there's an emergency to meet because the rumor has just spread that in the top story, five floors above the ground, a man and his wife are trapped. Let's go, firefighters! Let's go to the intersection of Broad and Main Streets, where you remember Tim Collins and Chief Cody were discussing the possibility that the terrific fire in the tenement house was caused by arson. And just a moment ago, as they stood talking, a woman ran up.
There were 12 families asleep in that building, Chief Cody, when somebody started the fire. It's worse than arson. It could have been murder.
It's only luck that we got everybody out in time. A few minutes more and half of them wouldn't have had a chance for their lives.
Yes, sir.
Fireman! Oh, Mr. Fireman!
Huh? What is it, ma'am?
I know this woman, Chief. We took her out of the second floor along with her baby.
Oh, Mr. Fireman, it's terrible.
Now, madam, you ought to stay with the others we let out of the building. You'll be safer there where everybody else is across the street.
But everybody isn't there. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
What's that?
You don't mean that somebody...
I talked to everybody that's there, Mr. Fireman, and I looked everywhere, but they're not in the crowd.
Who isn't? Quick, tell us.
Joe Ferguson and his wife. They live on the top floor.
Rescue squad. Man and woman on the top floor.
Now, tell me, ma'am, top floor, front or rear?
Quick, ma'am, it makes a difference.
Why, the rear. They have the back rooms on the top floor. And I don't see what difference it makes at all. But I guess you know what you're doing.
Oh, if they're in the rear, Chief, that's going to be tough. With the angle the buildings make, we'll never get a ladder to the top floor.
Then how did you get this woman and her baby out of the second floor back?
Well, Murphy just barely made it with a straight ladder, Chief Cody. He could never reach the third, let alone the top floor.
And the chances are the rescue squad can't work through from the front of the building because that blaze in the stair shaft cuts off the way.
What about a scaling ladder, sir? If it came to that, I could go up the rear of the building with a scaling ladder.
I'll go around the rear and size it up myself.
All right, you'll need a light, sir. It's pitch black there where the buildings come together.
I'll take an order to the commander of the searchlight engine, Collins. I want a floodlight at the rear of this building.
Yes, sir.
Maybe it's only 4 o'clock in the morning, but I want that black angle lighted up brighter than day.
Hey, Mrs. McCollum.
Who's that? Who's yelling my name?
Over here, Mrs. Mack. Look, it's me, Joe Ferguson.
Joe Ferguson? Why, whatever are you doing there in that crowd?
Oh, the cop wouldn't let me go back there where they got you folks. Tell him who I am, will you? Tell him I got a right to be with you folks who was in the tenement.
Officer, that's Mr. Ferguson.
Yeah.
Why, he ought to be over there at the first aid station this minute along with the rest of us.
Well, I guess that's better. Come on, Mrs. Mack. I'll go over with you and join the folks.
My goodness, it don't seem right roaming around in the middle of the night all wrapped up like this in mostly a blanket. But my baby's all right. The folks at the first aid, they're taking care of him. They wouldn't let me go at first, but I said to them, I said, this is life and death, I said. I gotta tell that young fireman about... Oh, my goodness.
Man, what a blaze. Oh, well, you bet the whole tenement don't cave in. Maybe crash down right on them fire wagons, huh? What a sight, huh?
Joe Ferguson.
Huh? What'd you say?
Joe Ferguson, it was on account of you and Amelia I left the first aid station and had to come out here. I had to tell him you're up there on the top story getting burned to death, but you're back there behind the fire lines all the time.
Well, so what? Come on, I gotta find Amelia. She's starting worrying.
Mr. Fireman! Oh, Mr. Fireman, I found him!
Hey, cut it out! You got no call.
Is that you again, ma'am?
Here he is. I found him. He was down here in the street all the time.
Who? Wait a minute. This isn't Ferguson.
Whatever it is, answer me that, huh? Why shouldn't I be down here in the street, huh?
Oh, mister, I think Chief Cody'd like to talk to you.
Isn't it wonderful? Here we all thought they were in such danger, him and his wife Amelia, and here they are.
Yes, madam, you better get back to first aid and look after your baby. And, mister,
yes,
you've got some explaining to do. Chief Cody, here's our man. This is Ferguson, the man who's supposed to be trapped on the top floor.
Well, that's a break. Mister, we were just trying to figure out how to get you out. It looked like a tough nut to crack.
And so does he, Chief. Take a look at him.
Hmm?
Hey, listen, what's the idea? Let go of my...
I'll let you go when the chief says so, Mr. Ferguson.
Well, now that's interesting. Yes, sir, Private Collins. That's a mighty interesting exhibit you've got there.
Hey, who you calling an exhibit, huh?
That's a pretty smart outfit you're wearing, Mr. Ferguson. Overcoat and hat. Yeah, even had your shoes shine for the big event, didn't you?
What big event?
He's completely dressed, Chief Cody, even to his necktie.
So what? What do you think I am, a hobo?
Ferguson, look at those people over at the first aid station.
Huh? Yeah, I looked. I saw them before. That's the folks from the other tenements.
Well, look again. You notice how they're dressed?
You call that dressed, huh? They look like a bunch of those, what do you call them, those refugees or something.
Well, they are refugees, Ferguson. They've just fled for their lives in the middle of the night from the threat of fire. And there's not one of them had time to get fully dressed.
Well, listen, if you're trying to make out that I should have been...
Quiet, you. Chief Cody will ask the questions.
Now, Mr. Ferguson, suppose you tell us how it happens you had time to get dressed and out of the building. When nobody else did?
Say, listen, you got no call to treat me like I was a crook or something. You want to know something? It was me rung in the alarm. Yes, sir. It was me rung in the alarm. If it wasn't for me, every one of those people over there could have been burned to death and asleep before you guys woke yourselves up and got over here.
How did you know there was a fire?
Huh? Well, I smell smoke, that's how.
And got yourself fully dressed before you pulled the alarm? You expect me to believe that?
Well, Chief, I'll tell you the truth. We're moving, see? Tomorrow we're moving clean out of the state. So I sends the missus to bed and I stays up to pack our things.
Well, if that's so, Chief, he must have lost all his property.
Is that right, Ferguson? You stayed up to pack your stuff for moving, but now you've lost everything in the fire?
Yeah, ain't it a shame. Practically everything we had. Every stick of furniture we owned gone up in smoke. Well, that's the breaks, I guess.
Let him go, Collins.
Well, Chief Cody, there's just one
question. Let him go.
Yes, sir.
That's more like it. No hard feelings, Chief. I guess you gotta ask questions and all. Well, I'll go on over to the first aid station. Gotta find my wife, see how she come out of it. I'll be seeing you, boys.
Collins, what's that question you wanted to ask him?
Well, if he knew there was a fire, Chief Cody, why didn't he rouse the neighbors, or at least his wife, before he pulled in the alarm?
Yes, that's what I'd like to know. But I want to give him enough rope. Maybe he'll hang himself and save us the trouble. What's that?
What's up? Oh, that's at the rear of the building, Chief.
Come on, we'll find out. Follow me.
Yes, sir.
What's up? What's the trouble?
There, Chief Cody, up there in that window. See the top floor.
The way this floodlight shows it up, great blistering blazes.
Yeah, it's a woman, Chief. All this time, she must have been hanging there half over the cell.
That fellow Ferguson's wife. So she was up there in their tenement after all.
Yeah.
The rat left her there.
And we'll never get a ladder up, Chief.
I see what you mean. We can't work in that narrow space.
Chief!
Oh, here comes Ferguson.
I wonder if he knew she was up there all the time. Collins, get a scaling ladder.
Yeah, Chief, my wife, Amelia. She didn't come out. I thought she was with Mrs. McCollum. I thought she got out safe. I thought she was
all right. Look up there, Ferguson.
No.
Yes, everybody else got out safe, Ferguson. It would be strange if the only one we lost should be your wife.
No. You got to save her. You got to. Look. I got money. I'll give you all I got.
We don't need your money for doing our duty, Ferguson.
No. Take it, Chief. Take it, will you? Look. It's the insurance policy.
What? Let me see that.
Sure. The insurance on my furniture. $500, Chief. As soon as I collect the money for what got burned up, you can have it. Sure, I'll collect it, though, first thing in the morning, and then you can...
Ready with the scaling ladder, Chief.
That's enough from you, Ferguson. I'll see you about this later on.
No, Chief. No. You got to listen to me. I don't care what happens to anybody else. I don't care what happens...
That's enough, you. Now get back there and keep still.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chief. Yes, sir, I will.
Collins.
Yes, sir. Ready, sir.
Send that woman down to us on a lifeline.
Yes, sir.
There's not much time. Now, when it's your turn to come down... You may have to jump.
Well, that's all right, sir. You just stand by with a net. That's all I ask.
Good. All right, Tim. You have your scaling ladder, and you know what to do. Good luck, and up you go.
Well, now, there's a tough spot to be in. The tenement fire is raging out of control. The building is near collapse. But Chief Cody places his trust in Tim Collins, rookie fireman, to save the unconscious woman in the top floor window. And Tim places his trust in his skill with a scaling ladder. For the details of his thrilling climb, listen to our next true-to-life episode of The Firefighters.
Well, that is all. Goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back on the same station the next time you hear...
That's it. Let's roll!
Firefighters, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of December 1949, a syndicated episode. Also on the radio that day were broadcasts of two George W. Trendle productions, The Lone Ranger and The Challenge of the Yukon on ABC. Also The Screen Director's Playhouse, featuring Edward G. Robinson and an adaptation of his motion picture, All My Sons, and Light Up Time, which featured Dorothy Kirsten and singer Frank Sinatra.
Now we close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with The Man in the Iron Mask, Episode 11, from 1948.
In the Iron Mask. Edmund Marchiali is finally convinced that all efforts have been made to try and find his beloved Marguerite without any success. So brokenhearted, he returns with his guardian, Georges Samar, to their estate in Gascogne. Here, Frasquita Carlos presents herself. She has been maid-in-waiting to Maria Teresa, Infanta of Spain, and has been forced to flee because it has been discovered that she sold a Spanish secret to the French ambassador. With her, she has letters from the tender-hearted Maria, who has always been fond of her. These letters beg Georges Sembar to do what he can for her. And when Frasquita is shown into the great living room of the Saint-Marc Castle, she is amazed to see what she believes to be a portrait of King Louis XIV. But she is told by the lackey that this is the ward of Georges Saint-Marc. The lackey then leaves her as she stares in great surprise at this portrait.
But this is absurd. I have seen that portrait so often. It is the King of France, Louis XIV. And yet, what is the King of France doing here? Perhaps this is his home where he lived incognito when he so wishes. Oh.
You are Senorita Carlos?
Yes, senor. And you?
I am Joyce and Ma. I'm happy to meet you. This letter speaks very highly of you. I trust the Infanta as well.
Very well, and very happy at the thought of coming to France. But you have heard, of course, senor.
Yes, yes. A great surprise. That is why I'm a little mystified now. You belong to her suite, I understand. I thought perhaps that you would have gone with her.
Oh, no, senor. I left the service of Maria Teresa because I dislike the court life. I like a country life. That is why, when I said I was traveling to Gascogne, that Her Highness suggested that I call on you. Unfortunately, although I am a lady of quality, I have very little money, senora. I think it is better to be quite frank.
Well, it seems so strange you leaving security to come to a strange country.
Well, there is something else of which I would prefer not to speak. It is an affair of the heart, if you understand.
Oh, but of course I do now. I trust you will not take the matter too seriously, whatever it may be.
No, of course not. Senor, Her Highness thought perhaps that you, with your influence, might be able to recommend me in some French house. I have always been an excellent companion for Her Highness.
Oh, there would be no trouble. I can assure you that to be with the suite of the Infanta of Spain is the highest credential you could carry. In fact, mademoiselle, it is quite a coincidence that you have presented yourself here at such a time. Would you perhaps be interested in taking a position here? That of tutor to my ward.
Tutor?
Yes, it so happens that my ward may one day go to Spain.
Oh, now I can understand.
What?
Nothing. Continue, senor.
He needs instruction in the Spanish language. As you are a lady of gentle birth, you must have the necessary educational qualifications. Is not perhaps as interesting a post as you would gain in Paris, but...
And is that your ward, the portrait over the fireplace?
Yes, mademoiselle.
But of course I accept, senor. It is an honor. Perhaps the greatest honor that we could confer upon a stranger in a strange country.
Oh, not really.
Oh, I think so, and I am most humbly grateful, senor.
Ah,
Colbert. We have not met for 2 days. And yet I've been so anxious to talk with you privately.
Yes, my Lord Cardinal. As you probably realize, there are a great many papers to be gone through.
Always the businessman. Always the expert in such matters. But we will speak of business in a moment. Lackey, you may withdraw. Now that we're alone, tell me quickly. You carried out my instructions?
No, my Lord Cardinal.
What?
Let me continue, I pray. There was no need.
What do you mean?
When I went to the Bastille with the soldiers, we found that the job of work had already been done.
Don't tell me this girl was murdered in the Bastille by somebody else.
Oh, no, my Lord Cardinal. Apparently she died of a broken heart.
A broken heart?
Yes. She was dead when the water went to get her.
Well, that makes it so much easier. Death by natural causes. I hope that was recorded.
Oh, yes, my Lord Cardinal, I saw to that. Also, I took the liberty of having a hurried funeral in the pauper's grounds. I knew you were anxious that all evidence be removed very quickly.
You are most astute, my dear Colbert. I will not forget to reward you suitably. So now all evidence is removed. Our young friend pines his heart away in Gascoigne. And the peasant farmer's daughter, well, her pining is at an end. Let us hope he keeps sacred her memory. For the longer he pines for his lost love, the less likely it will be that he will ever want to marry any other woman who crosses his path. Edmund.
Oh, it's you, Uncle.
Edmund, you must rouse yourself. I opened this door and walked into the room and you weren't even conscious that I was here.
I'm sorry, Uncle.
But what were you thinking?
My thoughts were miles away.
Edmund, dear boy, you will have to forget her. Surely you will not allow this infatuation to ruin your life.
There will never be anyone else. Oh, Uncle, it's so hard. The greatest torture of all is the uncertainty. If only I knew the truth. What has really happened to her? Who were those soldiers?
Mine. And it is my wish that you study another language.
Another language?
I have interests now in a Spanish estate. It may be that I'll need you to help me in the management of this estate. It is most necessary that you learn to speak Spanish fluently.
I don't care what I do.
No. Time's a great healer, and with your new occupation, you might find yourself again. Now, come with me. There's a lady I would like you to meet.
A lady?
Yes. A very beautiful, dark-eyed senorita. She comes from Spain, from the court of the Infanta Maria Teresa.
But what is she doing here?
She is here to teach you Spanish. So come.
You seem very determined that I should learn this new language. I think I know your motives, Uncle. You want to help me to help myself. You want my mind to be occupied. That's very kind of you. I don't want to do anything but sit here and think of her all day and night. But if you think it might help me...
Of course. Come, my boy. Let us meet the señorita.
Frasquita Carlos had been studying intently the almost life-size portrait above the fireplace. Her pretty dark eyes were puzzled and her brows were wrinkled as she reassured herself over and over again that this indeed was the portrait that she had seen in the boudoir of Maria Theresa, the portrait of King Louis XIV of France. A footstep behind her made her realize that she was not alone. She turned quickly.
Good evening to you.
Oh.
I'm sorry if I startled you. My uncle will be with us in a few minutes. He's ordering some refreshment. I believe you've come on a long, long journey.
Then you are...
Edmund Marchiali at your service, Mama, dear. I understand you are to be my new tutor.
Why, yes. Yes.
You seem surprised.
Surprised? My surprise almost makes me speechless, Your Highness.
Your Highness? Is that what you call the Spanish gentry? But here we are addressed as Monsieur.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I think I understand. You wish to remain incognito.
Incognito?
Yes.
Sometimes I tell you speak in riddles. If only you would make yourself clear.
Your Highness, I may be a stranger here. I may have only just arrived from Spain. But I happen to have seen your portrait once before. I know who you are, and I will keep your secret.
Edmund Marchiali stared at the Spanish girl in the greatest astonishment. What was she saying? What was the meaning of these strange words? Indeed, what is the meaning of this whole strange business? For apparently there is a remarkable likeness between King Louis XIV and young Edmund Marchiali. Make sure you hear the next absorbing chapter of The Man in the Iron Mask.
The Man in the Iron Mask, on Tuned to Yesterday, a 1948 syndicated program, number 11 in that series, bringing the curtain down on this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time as we close out that story on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and enjoy more of these stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.